It's about looking at Christian culture or subculture. Because it's easy to surround ourselves in our lives with people who think like us, who have the same sort of values as us, enjoy the same sort of things as us. And by being part of church, we can rapidly find ourselves part of this community that loves God, that worships together, that looks out for each other. And then suddenly what happens is we suddenly realize we can end up being separated almost from everybody else out there. And when we talk to people at work or in the home or in everyday life, we find that, well, the things we used to have in common aren't always necessarily the same now. And when we start talking about going to church and singing songs, and people start to look at us as if we've suddenly grown a second head or are now talking in a foreign language. But what's important is that we feel that we have this sense of community and that we feel that we actually have somewhere that we belong. And that if we actually become Christians and go on with God, we can find that increasingly those in our life that aren't Christians, we can often struggle with how to relate to them and what do we say to them and what shouldn't we say to them. See, for me, being a professional Christian as I am, as some of you have called me in the past, the danger for me personally is that I could fill my entire week with church. I could fill the entire month or an entire year with just being involved in things in this church. Because we have so much going on. We have so many different ministries doing so many great things that my entire life could literally be at that point of being totally overwhelmed by being part of this. And so one of the challenges I've set myself for this year is to find opportunities to be just me out there and to just live out there in some, even if it's just for a few hours, of just being Ian Clarkson, and not Ian Clarkson who's the associate pastor of Fulwood Free Methodist Church, or someone that is part of this church, but he's actually just an everyday guy who's trying to live out his life for God. And it isn't easy to find those sorts of opportunities. So I wonder if you've ever actually felt out of place, a bit like a square peg in a round hole. And it can be in any place, especially if we end up being in somewhere new for the first time. Or maybe you're feeling like that right now. You're sitting here tonight, and maybe this might even be one of the first few times you've been here, and you're looking at us, and you're looking at the front of church, and you're thinking, okay, what am I doing here? I remember many years ago, the first time I came into this church, and feeling like that. Because my previous experience of church was nothing like this. It was St. Lawrence's Church of England. I had, as many of you know, I wore a white robe, so I looked like something out of Star Wars. It was all very formal, and you had to stand up and sit down at certain points. And then I came here, and the place was full for a start. What were all these people doing here? And it was just a completely different experience. And for many of us as Christians, anywhere outside of church can often feel like it's like we are the odd ones out, like we don't quite fit in because of what everybody else is talking about, what they discuss, what they did at the weekend, and all that sort of thing. So as I mentioned, I've been trying to think, what can I do that is where I'm just out there as me? And actually, this weekend, I'm now in the middle of 2 weeks of jury service. And it is just that entire experience of suddenly looking in on a completely different world. It's bizarre because one of the things that, because you have to go for an introduction on the first day and they show you a video of what to expect. And I thought, hey, if people started coming into our church, should we actually show them a video? This is what to expect when you go into our service. No, we're not going to do that. But it's just suddenly there's about 60 or 70 of us all sitting there going, so what do we do now? And they're telling us we can't go outside. And if you can only do what, be within a certain distance of the lady who makes the announcements, and when they call your name, et cetera, et cetera, you've got to do what they tell you to do, and then you've got to go to certain courts and everything else. And we're all sitting there, almost like little school children going, oh, what are we doing? And then I got called up. Monday was boring as anything. Because I just sat there. I mean, I'd taken some work in and I got that done. And I was reading a book, catching up on some reading. And I didn't get called at all. And I was starting to feel a little rejected that I'd been left out. So I took loads of work in on the Tuesday, thinking I'm not going to get called today. And within 10 minutes of getting there, got called up. But not to the brand new courts, got called up to the old courts next to the town hall. And the description that somebody gave us as we were walking across was, folks, this is just like going into church. And I thought, do I say anything? They said, it's loads of old wooden pews and it's cold and it's all wood round the sides and it's all really old and really depressing. And I'm like, thought, no, I'm not going to say anything. And actually, we got in and I got chosen to be on the jury, and I'm not going to explain the case, but it was very interesting. And actually having that opportunity and to meet with people from different walks of life. We had on the panel with me, there was an ex-army guy, a couple of young mums, there was an older lady, a lady who's just moved over here from Ireland and was wondering why on earth she got called up. A guy who'd actually was like really cheesed off because this is now the third time he's been called up for jury service. And he's like, I don't want to end up with another 5-monther this time. And a Muslim guy as well. And just having an opportunity, because you're often in and out, just having conversations with people. And I was praying all the time, Lord, please don't let anybody ask me what I do. I just want to be me. Because people get a preconceived idea at times. I don't know if you find that. But it may be as a Christian, your work or your home life or the society in which you live in as a whole is that sort of a place for you that you don't feel like you fit in, but you're still part of it. But you're meeting so many different people from different walks of life. And you're trying to work out, how do I show God's love to these people? How do I explain to them what I'm about without them getting that stereotypical viewpoint of what a Christian actually is? And if that's how you're feeling tonight, then you're not unique. Because all of us try to live lives that glorify God, feel at some time in some places all sorts of pressures while still trying to live as part of this greater society. See, I think for each of us, as we read in the Bible, it talks about taking up our cross or facing persecution. That can be in very different forms for any one of us. And that as we try and live out our lives for Christ, what actually happens is that we can often face temptation to deny Jesus in some form, or that just by being a Christian in our home or our workplace is a battle and a challenge enough. Because those that are around us just put so much pressure on us. When I was growing up, I said to my parents that I'd become a Christian, they struggled with that because to them, by being part of the Church of England, I was already a Christian. And when I tried to explain, no, it's about a personal relationship for me. My dad would often, if I ever did or said anything that wasn't quite right, would always throw back at me, "I thought you were a Christian." And I used to go, I want to punch him, but I can't because we've got to love him. You know, do you understand what I'm trying? It's not a massive thing we have to face. It's actually just the little things each and every day that can get us down. So what I want us to look at tonight is how can we practically live from day to day in the midst of other people from which we greatly differ in terms of values, in terms of our standards, morals, etc., without being seen as weird or peculiar. That the reality is we are us, but that we also love God with everything that we have. That we're just trying to live our lives in such a way that glorify Him. That it's not about us being self-righteous or seeing ourselves better than anyone else. What we're trying to do is just be real and be us in a world that is hurting and a world that is crying out for something, but they don't even know necessarily what that is. And so what I want us to look at firstly is the Christian's attitude to the world. What is our actual attitude to the world? And what we've got up there is just, I don't know whether this is going to work or not. On the screen, you've got two circles. Which of those two circles is darker? Who thinks it's the one on the left? Okay, a few of you. Who thinks it's the one on the right? Okay, who thinks they're actually both the same color? Ah, okay. They are, in fact, both the same color. But because one is in the light, it looks slightly darker. The one that's in the darkness looks a lot lighter. And part of our thing is that for many of us, we can think that the way we should live our lives is that in order to be all that we can be for God, we've got to come completely out of society as a whole. That we spend our entire time and our energies as church. And that is great if that's what you feel you should do, but for me, the reality is that, yes, we have to come out of the world into some extent. And one of the things is that people often will quote is, it comes from 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 14 to 18, where Paul says, "Do not be yoked together with unbelievers, for what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Or what fellowship can light have with darkness? What harmony is there between Christ and Belial? Or what does a believer have in common with an unbeliever? What agreement is there between the temple of God and idols? For we are the temple of the living God." And that we can actually distance ourselves from the rest of the world by saying, well, I'm a Christian. I want to live my life for God. So I'm not going to have anything to do with any friends that I have that aren't Christians. Okay. If that's what you feel, okay. But what I want to show you is that what we actually have to do is look at how we are living our lives in the world, but not actually of the world. Because what Paul's trying to get across is that the issue is how we associate and what we actually are relating ourselves to. That this was an issue about worshipping idols and idolatry within the church. That this wasn't necessarily just about never ever speaking to anybody that isn't a Christian again. Because believers in Jesus Christ are simply in the world. We are physically present. What we have to understand is that as Christians, we are not of this world. We are not part of its value system anymore. Because when we accept Christ for ourselves, we are now living our lives for Him. We are living our lives based on his value system, not ours and not of the world's. In John 17, he's praying to God the Father. And just to read from verse 14, he says, I have given them, which is the disciples, and so includes us. And he says, I have given them your word, and the world has hated them. For they are not of the world any more than I am of the world. My prayer is not that you take them out of the world, but that you protect them from the evil one. Do you see the difference there? That he's saying, I don't want you to take them out of this world, but I want you to protect them from the evil one that is in this world. So we've got to understand that being in this world, but not of it, is necessary if we are to be a light to those who are actually in spiritual darkness. There are many people out there who have never seen or understood the love of God for themselves. They have never seen the light of Jesus in their lives. I think we are living in a time now of greater spiritual darkness than we have done for hundreds of years. Because we have got an increasing number of people who have never, ever set foot or inside a church or even picked up a Bible and read it for themselves. How on earth are they ever going to come to a place where they actually hear about it for themselves if people like you and me are not walking daily alongside them and actually revealing through our words and our actions the love of God to them? We're to live in such a way that we have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, and that we're humbling ourselves before others, that we are getting our hands dirty, so that those outside the faith see the good that we do, see how we respond in difficult times, and know that there's something different about us. Christians who make every effort to fit in other words, to live, to think, and act like those who do not know Christ, I think do him a massive disservice. That if we live our lives in such a way that we just fit in with everyone else around us, what are we doing? We might want to be friends with these people, but are we actually being friends with them if in some way we are not finding an opportunity to share the love of God with them? Because our purpose is to serve Christ, for it's God who is at work in us. It's God who is giving us the strength and the courage that we need. The second thing that I think is that we don't love it. We don't love the world. In John 2 it says, do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, love for the Father is not in them. For if everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, comes not from the Father but from the world and its desires pass away. But whoever does the will of God lives forever. Wow. That is a massive challenge. That if we are not to love the world, that we are not to have the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. That's a massive challenge in a world that, as we've looked at in the last couple few topics, is so image and media centered and bombarding us with imagery and stuff that is just so tempting to actually try and live a life that we don't end up loving that sort of stuff. That even the adverts that come on and all those other things. But I think what we have to remember is that we don't love the world for what it is, but we should show God's love for it as children of God without fault. Remember one of the greatest passages, for God so loved the world that he gave his son. He made a massive sacrifice for the world that is so far from him. And for us, if we say, well, I don't love the world, I'm going to keep it as far away from me as possible, I'm having nothing to do with it. We've got to understand that if we are following Christ, we've got to follow his example. That he actually laid his life down for the thing that was so detestable to him. And that includes me and includes you as well. And so the third thing we've got to do is don't conform, but be transformed by God at work in us. Paul again writes in Romans 12 from verse 1, therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. One of the things that has scared me a bit this week is that as we've gone through the case that we've had this week, there's been a man sat in the dock who literally, 12 of us, make a decision based on what we've heard about what happens next to him. And one of the things that I was struggling with was, one, what happens if we make a mistake? What happens if we make a mistake? Two, how do I know we're doing the right, you know, how do we get to that point where we're doing the right thing? Because you kind of build up a profile of the person based on the evidence you hear, but just by looking at them and just wondering what else has been going on in their life. And part of me just wanted to get up or write a letter to him and just say, will you give me a call? I'd love to just buy a meal for you and just find out where you're at. Because in many ways, from hearing the evidence and everything else, this was a guy who literally was being taken for a ride by his so-called friends. He was in the wrong place, the wrong time with the wrong people, and they were leading him up the garden path, literally. And it was so interesting being with the other jurors, because some people just took one look at him, and when we went back into the room, we're like, well, you know, just look at him and he's guilty. What? The danger is we can so often, because of what we read in the news or see on the TV, we make prejudgments about people. And God wants to renew our minds on a daily basis, that when we look at people, we look at them with his eyes. We see them the way that he sees them, that they are broken people. But another challenge for us is that, and our attitude towards the world, is that we've got to keep unpolluted from it. James 1:27 says, religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. Each and every one of us has a duty to the world out there, that we try and stay unpolluted from it, but at the same time are looking out for those people that are in need, the orphans and the widows. Those people who, without us, are going to be thrown by the wayside, who are not going to have help in any other way. Because we live in a world that is unjust. We live in a world that is full of greed. We live in a world that is full of hate and violence. And the ones that suffer the most are the children and the mothers. You look at the news and you see the refugees. and I know I keep coming back to this, but it's how do we respond to a world that is just in such a mess? How do we reach out to these people? But there has to be this sense that we are keeping ourselves away from the pollution of this world and its values, and in some way reaching out to them at the same time. And then another attitude we should have is that we've got to fight against it. Ephesians 6, verse 12. Paul writes to the church, "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms." We have a battle on our hands. We cannot just go and hide in a bunker and wait for it all to pass over. As God's church, we have to be fighting these powers and authorities that are trying to strip this world of any good that there is left. But as we try and do what is right, as we try and do what we believe God's will is for us, and as we try and be obedient to God and to his love for the world through Jesus Christ, we've got to realize something. We've got to realize that no matter what you do, some people will not like you. The reality is, even if we do the best thing possible for people, they may not like us for doing it because they may feel we're interfering. Jesus spoke of it in John 17, and there is also the unfairness of unreasonable people. And there are some people whose mindset and values are just so different from ours, they cannot get their head around why we would actually do something for them. The simplest example I can give is one of the first years we did the Family Fun Day. And I just remember I can't remember who was stewarding, and literally this guy had come in and was pushing one of the stewards just outside here and was trying to shove something in their hands. And they looked at me and I'm like, what's going on? And it's like, they're trying to give me money because they can't understand why we do something for free. There's got to be a catch. And I was like, well, no, don't, you know. And he's like, I'm telling him I'm not going to accept the money. And this guy was getting quite angry and upset. And his fist was clenched. I mean, it was around a £10 note or whatever. And I was like, for the sake of a black eye or whatever, just take the money off them. And we'll put it in the donation box, at which point the guy was happy. Because there are some people who do not understand, even though we've done it now for 4 or 5 years, why would you do a fun day for free? They don't get it. They don't understand that we just want to show them God's love. That it's free. Don't get it. Time and again, people come up to me, can we give you some money? No. Why not? Because it's a free family fun day. That people just, because of their value system and everything else, because of the world they've grown up in and the world they've known, people don't do that sort of thing. So what can we do? I think for us, what we've got to do above all else, and this is partly why we were doing the whole Dig Deeper theme this year, is that whatever it is we do, first and foremost, we have to love God above all else, with all our heart, soul, mind, body, and strength. Otherwise, why are we doing it? Why are we trying to reach out to this world if we are not completely and utterly fully charged up for Him, completely at one in our relationship with Him? Secondly, it's to love your neighbor. And I think that's to show the humility that allows us to mix with every type of and generation of people. As we heard in the passage that Emily read from Philippians 2 in verse 3, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves. Paul also writes that, you know, I would become all things to all men in order that I might win some. That we have to live our lives in such a way that we are actually trying to reach everybody, but do it with a humility and being unselfish, by not thinking of ourselves, but thinking of how can we help these people, but looking out for the interests of others. And then I think what also is important is that we're actually genuine in what we say and what we do. In Matthew 7 it says, "So in everything do to others what you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets." We've got to be absolutely genuine about who we are, but also what we're and what we're about, but in how we are treating other people. That, I think, is important. One of the interesting things that came up, because this case that I've been on this week, it was coming to an end. You know, it was all the summing up and everything was being done towards the end of the week. And Joanna was saying to me, "Oh, Gino, do you think you'll get picked to be the jury foreman?" And we'd already had a bit of a scenario, and because I was ended up sat nearest the judge, which is a cool place to sit because it, you know, you get to see, I quite like being near the authority figure. But out of the blue, because some evidence had come to light and one of the defendants, basically, they had nothing left against him. And the judge just suddenly looks at me and goes, "Ah, well, as you're nearest to me, I now need you to stand up and answer some questions." And I'm like, "What?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm not bothered." And he's like, "You're answering on behalf of all the other jurors." And I'm thinking, great, this is either going to make me really popular or really unpopular for the rest of the week. And so I was kind of thinking, oh, I actually quite like that bit. And I was saying to Joanne, I said, "I hope, you know, I actually would like, really like to get picked." Because obviously you've got to try and work with everybody else and get them all onto the same verdict. And I thought, well, I've done quite a bit of, you know, I've done home groups and stuff like that. I know how to tease answers out of people and then involve everybody else. That's got to come in somewhere. Anyway, it got to, I thought, I'm not going to put myself forward. We'll see what happens. So we all go into the room and you all have to hand your mobile phones in and whatever else you might have that can connect to the internet or anything else. It all gets locked into a big box and the jury bailiff goes out and locks the door. And you can see some people are like, "Oh, I've got no mobile phone. What am I going to do?" And then it's like, somebody said, "So who are we going to pick as foreman?" So I did the whole thing of when you don't want to be picked, I look down, and somebody went, "What about him?" And I look up, and this woman is pointing straight at me. And the guy next to me, the Muslim guy, goes, "Yeah, yeah, I've got a lot of respect for him." And I'm thinking, well, why has he got respect for me? And I had a quick chat with him after we made this. I said, why did you, what was the whole thing of you saying you got respect? He said, "Oh, you just seem a really genuine guy. You're like, you just a straight down the line sort of guy, and also because you're really big." Okay. But we have to be genuine. If we say we care for people, we have to follow through on it. If we say God loves them, we've got to love them with that same sort of love. Because if we don't, then it's a fake. It's not authentic. And then another thing that I think we've got to be careful of is avoiding the jargon trap. You see, because in every field of society, including Christianity, it has its own jargon, its own words that anybody coming in from the outside world is like, "What does that mean?" So words or phrases unique to that field. So for example, being in court all week, listening to things being said, I was, you know, a legal writ. I was like, "What's a writ?" And it's Dave or somebody can probably explain it better than I can. But you know, there's all sorts of different terms they were using this week, and we kept sending notes to the jury bailiff saying, "What does that mean?" Because we didn't quite. Or we had two great lawyers who actually could see the confused look on our faces and went, "Oh, just let me explain what that means to you." And it got me thinking is, how much of what we say here in church to someone who comes in for the first time, they look at what we're talking about or what we have on the screen and they go, what does that mean? Just some words to kind of throw into this. And it got me thinking, particularly last week, and I don't mean anything to the band here by this, but for example, we sang a great song last week that talked about the blood of the Lamb and that we are cleansed by the blood of the Lamb. And for a moment, I took off my Christian head and I put on my old head and I thought, for somebody coming in for the first time into church, what are they? They're going to be thinking, whoa, what do these people do on a Sunday? I have been cleansed by the blood of the Lamb. Are they into slaughtering sheep? So we've got to be careful in how we use words. And if we use these terms, which are important, you know, understanding that Jesus is the sacrificial Lamb once for all is vitally important because it helps fulfill all of the Old Testament. But if we just use it and people coming in don't understand it, we're creating a void between them. Just to quickly share, when I went to Nazarene Theological College, I ended up one day sat next to a guy who was a very enthusiastic Christian and liked to tell everybody how many people he had saved. And that caused me concern, like, well, I don't think you actually saved them. I think it's Jesus, personally. And out of the blue, he says to me, he says, so, brother, I'm like, okay, have you been atoned by the sacrificial blood of the Lamb that has cleansed you from all your transgressions? And I was like, okay. I said, I actually understand what you've just said to me, but how often do you introduce yourself that way? He said, every time I meet someone who I think is a fellow brother or sister, that's what I say to them. And I said, and how many people give you a response that you actually agree with or that is a definite yes? And he stopped and he went, what do you mean? I said, because if you talk to people that you've only met for the first time, you are making a massive assumption of where they're at on their Christian journey. And I said, for somebody who's only just been a Christian a short time, to hear some of those words will make them feel inferior. And the last thing I ever want to do as a Christian is make anybody else in the world feel inferior. Surprisingly, after the break, he didn't sit next to me. But we have to be careful on the words that we use around people. See, in that passage we're hearing about being stars in the night sky, that being a light in the world like a star in the night sky helps us to realize that, helps people to see Jesus, help people see Jesus through us as his church, that wherever we go, whatever we do, whatever context we find ourselves in, we are being lights, we are being stars in the darkness that are hopefully pointing people to Jesus and his love for them. Recognizing that at times people will have their own view of church and Christianity that might be similar to the things we see on the TV of how Christians are portrayed. I was going to show you a little comedy sketch video, but at the last minute, as I was just checking it was running correctly upstairs, I realized there's something really horrendous in the bottom corner of it, and I hadn't seen that before, so I apologize. But it's basically, time and again, it frustrates me massively when I see Christians, and in particular vicars or whoever else, portrayed as wimps or portrayed as a stereotypical image. When the reality is, I'm looking out on people from all different walks of life who have, many of whom I know have gotten a personal encounter with Jesus Christ and are living it out in many, many amazing ways. Why does that never get portrayed very often in the media? But a question I want to ask you for yourself tonight is, when people look at you, what do they see? Do they actually see the real you? Is the person that you are in this room tonight the real you? Or is there another side to you that the rest of the world sees that we don't get to see here on a Sunday? Because if we actually saw that, you'd be ashamed. Or is the reality that you're so ashamed that you're part of being part of a church and being a Christian, that it scares you almost to death to actually acknowledge that in the outside world? Because you're scared of the response you might get, the rejection you might get from the people around you. Because at the end of the day, it's not easy to be in the world, but not of the world. But we have to have both if we are to be his church. This is vitally important to our Christian walk, that we come together and we praise God together, that we are encouraged, that we are built up, that we are renewed, so that we can go back out there and shine even brighter than we did last week. That we can be even a greater witness for our Lord Jesus Christ. And Jesus himself never promised it would be easy, but he promised his glory for trying. Can I encourage you to shine brightly this week? And it might just mean just having a conversation with someone and asking them how their day has gone. It might just mean saying, you know, how are you this week? Taking time to listen to people. You don't have to explain the full gospel to them in 5 minutes, but walk with people on a daily basis. And I finish with this because I think this is important as well. And it comes from 1 Peter chapter 4, reading from verse 14. And if you feel that as a Christian, you've faced hard times and people have been getting at you, listen to these words. If you are insulted because of the name of Christ, you are blessed. For the Spirit of glory and of God rests on you. If you suffer, it should not be as a murderer or a thief or any other kind of criminal or even as a meddler. However, if you suffer as a Christian, do not be ashamed, but praise God that you bear that name. Will you bear that name this week? Will you change people's viewpoint of church and Christianity this week by the way you show God's love to them in all that you say and all that you do? God bless you.